Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including Tetrising all those games into your bag on the way home from Origins. All those returning, this one's for you. I am Daniel Winter.
And I'm Mark Uessa.
How are you, Mark?
I am well. It's the weekend, pretty uneventful. Well, actually went to one event, but I'll talk about it a little bit later.
Excellent. Yeah, looking forward to that. Hinted there, this was, as we're recording, this was Origins, the one of the bigger conventions in the board game space. I haven't heard much news out of that, to be honest. It's board games news is pretty scattered. We don't really have a big press conference like we do in the video game space, collating all those announcements into one spot. I'm still sort of recovering from the deluge of those video game announcements anyway, so I'm not sure whether I'd prefer that for board games. But it's not a lot to talk about right now in terms of news and other goings on. But we have a few topics to discuss. I guess I should say this is The Playlist, our sort of spin-off episode where we talk about some of the other games we've been playing and other topics of interest. What's news to you lately?
Yeah, I'm going to touch upon this because I was just trying to watch a video and trying to learn a little bit more about it. But so D&D is the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. So congratulations, D&D fans everywhere. And it's the 10th anniversary of 5th edition. Wizards of the Coast, who owns D&D, who is owned by Hasbro, of course, announced a new something 2024 edition of the core books. But no, this is not 5th. This is not 6th edition.
It's like
this
5. Is not 5.
It's not D&D code named D&D 1.
Yeah, is that not happening anymore?
It is probably happening. I think that's what they say. Wizards says that's the goal. There's going to be one edition to rule them all, but they are probably waiting for more uptake of their digital platforms first. Of course, Wizards of the Coast has their platform D&D Beyond, but I think that they want to make it more ubiquitous. Like, there's a lot of competing digital platforms, platforms like Roll20, like Foundry. Exactly. There's other ones cropping up every day, it seems like, on Steam and things like that, or just browser based. And all the power to those alternate platforms. But it seems like Wizards is not satisfied because they don't own the market of these digital platforms to
have it all.
Run the games. Yeah. Sell the books. Of course, they sell some of the books on their D&D Beyond platform. But they would love to sell D&D supplemental content. They would love to sell maps, which they're starting to integrate. They would love to sell player-generated content on their digital platform. And I think that's really what the convergence is going to be. D&D 1 is going to be this all surrounding sales platform, kind of like Microsoft 365 or Adobe's, Creative Cloud, right?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Having grown up in the era of the console wars, right? Nintendo versus Sega, PlayStation versus Xbox. And those are those platforms are largely going away in favor of digital platforms and web stores and ecosystems. So and tabletop is by no means immune to that.
What are they doing in 2024? They have all new, some new revised editions of the core books, which is to say Dungeon Master's Guide, Player's Handbook, and Monster Manual. Those are the core three, as told to us by that great Weezer song in the garage. These are the books kind of you have to have, or they tell you you have to have. So do you really need these new 2024 editions? They say that they're backwards compatible, and then they say that they're extending what's existing. It's not replacing. It's a little bit confusing. It's more than a little bit confusing. My oldest kid is a big D&D fan. That's their RPG of choice. It's not my RPG of choice, but obviously it's a huge player, so I'm interested in it. I'm not sold. For what I hear, at least where the Dungeon Master's Guide is concerned, they're introducing a campaign setting, which is great. I'm all for that. I guess they're reintroducing it because it's a known one called Greyhawk. I don't know it very well myself, but I know that a bunch of novels and stuff are set in that. Some campaigns are set in that. and they're adding like 5 short adventures or things like that. But you know what? Like, nothing was stopping them from releasing a Greyhawk campaign setting guide.
And they still want to sell all those old campaign guides, right?
Yeah, and well, they really just want to sell another set of core books. That's my belief.
Yeah.
Call me a cynic, but it seems like that's what they're going for.
Which is a big ask with increasing push to convert people to other systems, right? And they curious to see how well this plays out, or if people will stick with what they know, or explore. If they're going to pay that money, will they just explore a new system?
Lots of other companies are coming out with their own versions of D20, quote unquote, fifth edition without the Hasbro attached. So I would encourage you to seek those out too. They're doing cool stuff and probably a whole lot cheaper.
Well, that is to say, if you're going to have to learn a new system, maybe look at what else is out there. Plenty of options. Like I have a small example to bring up later, as I'm sure you will. But go watch Quinn's Quest. Is it a relatively recent series from Shut Up and Sit Down's Quinn's, with some great recommendations.
Right, and better yet, if you love D&D, which all the power to you if you do. If you love 5th edition, keep playing it. Keep playing the books that you have. Don't give them another cent. Because you don't have to upgrade. Keep playing 5th edition if you love it. Do what you love.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was a bit of a rant. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You go next.
As I mentioned, I don't have a lot to talk about. Following our last discussion of all the Summer Game Fest announcements, there was, following that, a Nintendo Direct. Nothing major in there. A little bit for everyone. Some new Mario, some new Zelda, some new Turok. As always, a bunch of remasters of older games. I played a lot of Turok in the day. Maybe I can finally beat that without God mode.
Yeah, is it actually new Turok, or is Turok re-release?
Is it the first or the second one? I think it was the original game as a remaster,
right,
on Switch. But probably the biggest reveal from that is that the new Zelda is actually all about Zelda. It is now the Legend of Zelda playable. Is Echoes of Wisdom, I believe, was the game.
Yeah, that was a highlight for me for sure. I actually haven't even watched the trailer yet, even though the key art looks adorable. I think it's supposed to be like somewhat of a successor to the remaster of A Link to the Past, right?
Link's Awakening, I think.
Link's Awakening, okay, yes.
Yeah.
So it's top-down-ish, kind of cutesy, super deformed versions of the characters.
Almost
right?
Tilt Shift in its perspective, and there's sort of like looking like models. Very cutesy sort of chibi designs. You're playing as Zelda, and rather than just, you know, as a reskin of using the same abilities, it looks to be keying around. She can basically copy objects and then recreate them, whether that's a table that she can recreate as a platforming puzzle, or monsters that she can basically summon to fight for her as like some kind of necromancer.
Yeah, that seems interesting, at least mechanically, that they're sort of extending the creative tools given to you by Tears of the Kingdom, with their sort of like mixy matchy combiny bits
sandboxy multiple ways of solving a puzzle, I would hope, rather than being a very rigid rigid solutions.
Yeah, I think optimistically speaking, that sounds very cool, enticing. I'm sure I'll take a look at it. I'm not super jazzed in general by the Nintendo offerings these days. I mean, 80% of them are remakes, remasters, recharging you for old games you probably own. I'm against that. As you know, I do enjoy backwards compatible, forwards compatible platforms. Things like what Microsoft has been doing seems to have been doing for the last few years.
For all of their sort of good reputation in terms of game design, Nintendo have never been the most family-friendly or wallet-friendly, for that matter, in some of their very antiquated sort of walled garden designs. But you never know. We're expecting an announcement regarding the Switch 2 or whatever. I'm sure they're going to shake it up in some wacky way. They always find a way to sort of turn left instead of going, iterating on the same concept.
But they don't want to pull a Wii U, though, right? They want to make it very clear what their new offering is, and I betcha it'll just be a souped-up Switch.
Everyone said that about the original Wii, though, and then they yeah, took it. we got the Wii U, so we'll see. Right. Okay, is that all for the news? So, oh wait, no, I think you've got something else. And Ted is also here to.
You actually put it on the list and reminded me. It's another entry in a series that we've talked about recently. I've talked about very briefly, called 5 Parsecs from Home. Yes. It's had other editions before, like a Bug Hunt is a kind of a very like Starship Troopers-esque home. Not what's that game that's popular? Helldivers. Right. Helldivers type thing. Yeah, yeah. But this time around, it's called 5 Parsecs from Home Tactics, which is a standalone book. It's 200+ pages. And unlike video games that have slash tactics at the end, where the tactics is the smaller version, this time it's the bigger version. Now, whereas 5 Parsecs from Home was very much skirmish-based, back alley, urban sort of, or in the cramped ship sort of combat, this time you can do big battles, right? What does it say? Tanks, multi-unit skirmishes, bigger monsters, events, platoons, scenario-based situations. You can play it single-player, multiplayer, GM or GM-less. So all of that sounds very exciting for a relative newbie in the tabletop wargaming world, like I am. But I love sci-fi, so maybe I'll get that book and I'll wrangle you into playing with me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally, I think I'd prefer the sort of tight tactical, like back alley starship sort of fighting, as you said. I'm sure this is of interest to many people. I'm still trying to track down a copy of that original, though.
I have the hard copy. I'd be happy to share it with you. PDF I have available as well, because Modiphius is great that way as a publisher. They give you the free PDF if you buy the physical copy of any one of their books, even ones that they've indie games that they've published, like 5 Parsecs as well. So kudos to them. I actually like those more intimate, smaller unit battles myself, so I'm all with you there. If it's all right, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the event that I went to yesterday.
Yes, please do. I was hoping to get to this myself, but had some family commitments. So yeah, please tell me about it.
Busy. So I was pleased to go. So it's Sunday, June 23rd today, and of course yesterday was June 22nd, which is Free RPG Day, a day that I didn't really know about until more recently, but I've been, you know, eager to attend every year in the last few years, and I've gotten some good books from it in the past. And this year was no different. I went to my friendly local game store, Rain City Games, here in downtown Vancouver, and they had a bunch of supplements on the table, some stuff from Green Ronin Games, from Paizo, from some publishers that I didn't know very well. They had some stuff from, Werewolf the Apocalypse. So I picked up a couple of supplements there. I was planning to. So Rand City Games got a number of the community members together to put on some events. Some were actual play, sort of one-shot sort of things. But the one I signed up for, because I was interested, thought my oldest kid would be interested in, was called Intro to Game Mastery, Intro to Game Mastering, with Out on the Shelves Library, which is
so this is more like a workshop then than an actual game?
Yeah, it was 100% a workshop.
Oh, okay.
So I signed up for it with my oldest kid, my 11-year-old. We went. It was in the Rain City Games kind of back room there, the dedicated game space. And that space is really nice. It's not huge or anything, but it has nice tables laid out. It's private. You can close the door. You don't hear the retail stuff going on in the front. And it was led by, like I said, Out on the Shelves Library. They are a local, I guess, game library that focuses on inclusion, diversity. They promote inclusivity and LGBTQ. IAS+ all the letters of the rainbow, which is fantastic because of course June is Pride Month as well, and we are support Pride in our household. So I was very excited to go. I am a GM. I have GM'd, but I feel like I could get better. My kid is a GM they like to GM, but I think everyone has room to grow. And so it was really cool to attend this. There were three representatives from OOTS there who kind of ran the session, and there was about maybe 8 or 10 attendees, like myself and my oldest.
Nice.
While my oldest was the only kid there, everyone else ranged from, more experienced people to newbies, which I guess makes sense because it was intro. And it was a really good session. I made a page and a half of notes, and they ran us through two workshop exercises. So in addition to just kind of general advice and topics, the first exercise was about kind of session planning. They talked about kind of storytelling techniques. So they suggested three techniques, and they encouraged us to choose one and to utilize it to sort of rough out a core concept. So some of the techniques that they suggested, I think, were like a timeline of events, obviously makes sense. The other one was something called Countdown to Midnight, which is from one of the PBTA books, I think. And it's kind of like the clock is ticking. If the players don't attend to the big bad or the situation, what are the stakes? What's the outcome for them or the community at large if they don't take care of the problem? And that was a really cool exercise, I thought. And the other one was just options, like creating a menu of options, but not assigning an order to them, just like having events or scenarios in mind, and then you sort of adapt to what the players do and sort of feed those options to the players when the right time comes up.
Not waiting a particular option yourself as the GM.
Yeah, it's just not railroading, right? That was the whole point of that exercise. And it was really cool. It made me sort of rethink what I tend to do. I tend to follow pre-written adventures because, I like a little help, right? And I'm going to try and be a little bit more flexible with that in the future. The second exercise they ran us through was creating a table. So a lot of older games, and once again, more recently, a lot of newer games have a sort of random rolling tables. So these are intended to offer prompts to GMs or to player groups to help you figure out, well, what to do next. So you can just kind of really encourage spontaneity and creativity and uncertainty by using these rolling tables. And they ran us through some where we created our own. So it's kind of like we injected creativity into it and then use the RNG gods to come up with a result. So my kid really liked that exercise, and I think they got a lot out of it. I got a lot out of it. So kudos to them. I'll say that again, Out on the Shelves Library. Some of their members run some of the one-shots on a regular basis at Rain City Games.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, being a GM is always an ongoing learning experience. It can be easy to fall into the trap of making it about you and trying to internalize how to think through the player experience important to think about, especially for kids. It's hard to sort of break out of that, of your own little mindset, right? And I'm sure it's helpful to think about giving some framing devices for how to think about growing.
Yeah, it's funny because kids are the best role players, right? They can create a scenario on the fly. They can go with the flow. They can tell tales collaboratively so well. And as we get older, we actually lose that ability. So in a lot of ways, this is about sort of unlearning those impediments that get in our way.
Yeah. I'm gonna be digging up some. I bought a kid's coloring role playing book for my daughter at some point. I'm gonna dig that out shortly and try that with her.
Very cool. Okay, shall we roll into what we've been playing?
Yes.
Then? All right. Why don't you start us off?
Sure. Let's start with video games. So just as a follow on from last episode, we talked about another Crab's Treasure, obviously a Souls-like, which got me hankering for more of that action and some of the more traditional structure and framework of those games. So I've been playing a couple. I mean, obviously all the talk right now is of Shadow of the Erdtree, the expansion for Elden Ring, which I would like to play, but I don't know how much, I don't remember what state my save file was in as to whether I'd be able to jump into it or that I have to spend 50 hours replaying the game to get back up to that point. So don't have the patience to figure that out just yet. So what I've been playing instead is the We Have Dark Souls at Home, Lords of the Fallen. So this is the 2023 game of that name, not the 2015-ish.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Ostensibly, not quite a sequel, basically not even a remake. It's a completely new game that shares some similarities in aesthetic and concepts, and it ain't the same publisher, not even the same developer. Completely different game. It was originally supposed to be a sequel, but new game, same title. So this is very much Dark Souls in every sense of the word, in the attributes and stats that you're leveling up, the level structure and hence the very cool level design of this Dark Souls game, so they loop in around themselves in some really clever ways that I really enjoy. A couple of things that set this apart, though, is that you have a lantern that lets you see into another realm, like the land of the dead or something. And any time you can whip out this lantern, and basically it's like a parallel universe that you can see into any time, and it works seamlessly in some really... The effect is very cool. Even if it's going from like everything looking very brown to everything looking very grey, just the technology of seeing the two different realms, like just a window into it at any time, it's really cool. And they use that for some platforming puzzles, some like secret areas you can find. Sometimes you have to go, you can sort of transition into that realm entirely to solve some puzzles and get to some areas, but then you can't teleport back at any time. You can only teleport back in certain preset areas. But there's this real sort of push your luck element, because the souls, it's a bit of a Mad Libs. Souls are vigor here, and the bonfires are vestiges. So yeah, just fill in the Mad Libs for the equivalent. But basically, get a multiplier when you're in this other realm. But enemies are spawning in constantly. Like there's waves of enemies always spawning in, and they ramp up in intensity, and eventually there's just like invulnerable enemies that will chase you down until you can escape. So there's a bit of a push your luck element there. So extra level of tension. The other key thing is that it's actually surprisingly easy for one of these games. So while the mechanical complexity of like a whole bunch of systems to learn, and like that Latin has a whole bunch of mechanics that they just throw you in the deep end, and that can be a bit tricky to learn, but the actual moment-to-moment combat is relatively easy for these games. Most of the bosses I've beat on the first try, with a couple of exceptions. And so that's not really the challenge here, which I'm kind of appreciating. I'm not sure if it's good game design, or I'm just in an abusive relationship with this genre, in that as soon as it isn't punishing me, I appreciate it, right? It's just enough of a challenge. It does rely a little bit on those gotcha moments. It was an enemy hiding behind this wall when it lures you out with a treasure, but you didn't see this guy, or there's mimics, and a lot of the early levels are on like platforms that you can easily be knocked off of, shall we say. So a few gotcha moments that are like surprises, and like just it's punishing, but not in the reflexive I can't parry and defeat this enemy type of means that is a struggle for so many people with these games.
That's promising. Like I said, last main episode, really enjoyed Another Crab's Treasure. I enjoyed how the combat was a little bit more forgiving than some of the other Souls-likes that I played. So that makes me want to try out Lords of the Fallen more, because I kind of got into the Shadow of the Erdtree hype a bit myself. At least it encouraged me to reinstall Elden Ring, and I played it for about an hour last night, and I remembered why I stopped playing that is because that game is very gray and very brown and very ochre, and kind of obtuse, like a lot less transparent in terms of like even what objects do, right? One of those games, so those FromSoft games, has a weird name and a weird even like imagery for what an object should do, like the gross finger of warping or something like that. Like, what are these things? They make it intentionally opaque.
It's part of this sort of mystique and mystery that I like to build their world around and make you dig to figure out what's going on. Why am I killing these people? I don't know. Like, there's a reason, but it's going to make you work to figure out what your actual goals are. Everyone's talking in this weird poetic like rhymes, and like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like,
yeah, and no knock on that, because I know like they do that because some people absolutely love it. So obviously it's by design. It's just not designed for me.
No.
And that's fine. But I do appreciate games that are a little bit more transparently designed, like Crab, or even games like that. Liza P I played for a little bit. Even some of the more like mainline Dark Souls series are a little bit more straightforward, at very least because they're not open world like Elden Ring is. I don't feel like so daunted by just mysteries and terror in every direction.
That's Liza my relationship. P was interesting in that it was more interesting world building and more explicit storytelling, but I found the difficulty in that was tuned a little high, especially by the end. It was a very difficult, like, much more fast-paced sort of dodging and parrying, a lot more reflexive that game.
Yeah, I give a lot of appreciation to transparency in design, like just being able to see what things are supposed to do and how things are supposed to work. I have a hard enough time with reflexes if I know how things are supposed to work, right? So if I know exactly if a game shows me exactly how it should work and I have a challenge exercising that or executing it, that's my fault. That's still a fine game. If a game makes things cloudy and hard for me to understand what I should be doing, I tend to say that that's the fault of the game.
Yeah, I mean, these games are largely about overcoming the challenge and getting good, right? It's hard to do that when you don't know how the systems actually function in the first place. Right. Like, it's hard to figure out where do I need to improve? How do I improve when you don't know how the mechanics interact with each other? You don't know what you don't know what that finger does. Would that finger help me? I don't know.
Right, but some people love that, and that's by design. Oh,
yeah.
So good on them.
Yeah. One other quick one I want to shout out is that another Crab's Treasure reminded me of a game called Ashen. This came out in like 2018, and it was a similar sort of indie Souls-like with a smaller scope. Very, very cool, like, art style, like low poly, not very systems heavy, like pretty systems light, similar to Another Crab's Treasure, but it had some cool sort of town building elements as well. But that is to say, I was thinking about, oh, what's that studio working on these days? Turns out they just announced that at the Summer Games Fest. It's a game called Flintlock. I think it's a whole like subtitle to it. I can't remember. It's Flintlock. Let's look for that name. There was actually a demo out that I tried, and it feels really good. It is a Souls-like game still, but more of a traditional-looking game, sort of action-adventure-looking game. Big focus on mobility. So jumping around, moving about feels really good, but you very quickly get like a double jump, triple jump. And so it feels a little bit like Jedi Survivor. So the big focus on being able to move around a lot, it felt very tight and responsive. So I really liked that. I didn't get very deep in, just enough to know that I want to play more. It has a cool little fox creature that follows you around, and hey, more games need weird little guys that follow you around for the game. And he's some kind of god. So he gives you magical abilities that you can access and unlock as the game goes on.
And you didn't mention that it's coming out on Game Pass, right?
Yes, next month, sometime in July, I believe it's coming out.
Oh man, the flood of interesting games is not stopping. Speaking of interesting games not stopping, I told you I took out Prince of Persia Lost Crown from the library again. I played it some more. That game is totally my jam. It reminds me of this smaller Metroidvania, which I played years ago, called Shadow Complex. I played it on the 360, and it's by this developer Chair, but they had some cool ideas, and that game was doing some interesting 2.5D stuff, so that was fun. Loved that, and this seems like the continuation of it, but the scope is grand, the execution is really tight. It's a really solid one of those.
It's not really doing anything new, but it's very good at being one of those.
Right, exactly. And it's from, you know, Ubisoft, It's from a big old publisher, but it has that sensibility, a lot of the sensibilities of a more indie style studio game. But it's also carrying on the legacy of a long running series, obviously the Prince of Persia series, one of the first kind of like 2D platforming, you know, adventure games of that pedigree.
Excellent. Yes, curious to see what you think of that. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Any other games you're playing?
Not for me, no. Any other video games you want to talk about?
I won't talk about them because I've talked in the past, but I'll just say I'm continuing to play Unicorn Overlord.
Mm-hmm.
I played a couple of fun, longer missions of that, and I was reminded of why I enjoy it. And I think I will continue to play it in, I guess, in spurts. Like, I don't think I'll play it as my mainline game.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it to be on sale, basically. It's because I want to play it in short bursts, so it's not going to work as a library loan.
Yeah, makes sense. And then I'm continuing to play Rogue Trader. My instincts about that game are dead on. Like, great writing. It's already making me make some interesting choices. I'm on like the second area of gameplay. I've basically just finished one mission and have acquired my first non-intro character. And just like really interesting choices, it's making me think like, what kind of terrible person is this game asking me to be? And should I be this kind of terrible person or should I be this other kind of terrible person? And I like that.
There's only different flavors of evil in the Warhammer universe.
Yeah, but it's like they're playing within a spectrum, right? It's all terrible dirtbags, but it covers the gamut of terrible dirtbag characters and terrible dirtbag factions. So I like that. I like how it's committing to its material, source material.
No escape from playing the evil path there.
Right.
Okay, should we jump to some tabletop games?
Yeah, absolutely. You start us off.
Yeah, well, I mean, not quite tabletop, because I actually wanted to talk about a couple of adaptations, digital adaptations.
Nice.
There's one, a board game called Bullet Star or Bullet Heart. I think there's a couple of different standalone versions of this from Level 99 Games that I've been meaning to try. But they just announced, well, they just released a demo for a digital version on Steam called Bullet Surge. And so this is an interesting combo of like Tetris meets like a match three game. Basically, you have a grid of discs, and these discs are currently constantly being added to the grid. New ones are coming in. They don't all fall to the bottom. They all have numbers on them. They'll be numbered from 1 to 4, and they'll position themselves on the grid basically according to their number. And what you're trying to do is clear the board, but you have these patterns. So a pattern might say, well, you need three. If you have three bullets in a row here, then the three adjacent to them will clear. Or if you have two equal numbers in these two spots, the three spaces below will clear. It's a lot of pattern recognition, but those patterns are constantly changing because they're all one use only. Once you use a pattern, you have to get a new one and look for a new design. So it's all real time, I should say. So constantly on the ball there. It was a little bit stressful. I wasn't very good at it. I failed miserably my couple of games. But really interesting balance of the friction of both trying to look at what new discs coming into the board, what patterns you've got coming in, other abilities. Like, every character is quite different. One character lets you move the gem, or sorry, move the discs to adjacent spaces. Another one used the patterns to shift them to new spaces, so you couldn't move them automatically. So every character played quite differently. There was a score attack mode, which isn't, that's not my motivation in playing games, that just play endlessly. But there was a boss attack mode where you basically mix and match against other characters. So the character you're playing against also has a unique ability that's different for each character that changes the puzzle again and trying to counter them. So a lot of, I don't usually go for these sort of real-time games, but some really interesting concepts there. They're balancing those frictions. And I'm very curious still to play the digital, sorry, play the physical version. So I'm not sure if that's real-time. I assume it must be, but I'm very curious how you manage that in real-time as a Tetris-like.
Yeah, what you described of that Steam game sounds very digital forward, so I'm surprised that they have created I mean, I've heard of about Bullet actually very, very lately. So I'm surprised that they made a digital version of the game that's so digital. And I wonder how close it is to the physical analog version of the
game. I mean, the original board game was clearly very influenced by video games, both in design and aesthetic.
Yeah, all of their games are, in fact. Yes. All of the games they put out are either based off of video games like Street Fighter or Final Fantasy Tactics, or they're based off of digital games like Millennium Blades is obviously based off of TCGs, but in an interesting way. So their games about games, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, it did feel a little unpolished in terms of the tutorialization and trying to learn the game, but the actual, like, it was a really seamless play experience. The music was really good. The actual mechanics, once I figured it out, it was pretty good implementation of that. So that is Bullet Surge on Steam.
Very interesting. I'm actually going to pass the board game conversation stick back to you because I have not been playing any new games on the board game side except for my kind of standard fare.
Got a few games going, but it's been really hard to get physical board games going these last few weeks. Again, it's the summer slump is real. Everyone's busy or just tired. I've had a few friends calling like, hey, I'm just really tired today. I'm not going to make it. So that's totally fair. So things will be a little slower on that front for the next little bit until we can catch back up. But yeah, it's a good time for digital implementations of board games. Lots of options out there. So I think you had some TTRPGs to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, I am kind of falling down the miniatures painting rabbit hole. I won't go in depth about that because I think I talked about it last episode. Mm-hmm. And also, it's just such a deep hole, right? there's a whole raft of videos I'm watching on YouTube. I've bought a number of products. I am trying things out. I have like 20 figures that I'm painting simultaneously, which I probably went overboard. But I realized I have dozens of minis. I think I told you that I had that Massive Darkness game. Mm-hmm. I have this game called Dungeons and Dragons Return to Castle Ravenloft, the board game.
That was the first game I ever painted. And I never finished it, but I painted the heroes for that game. It was my first one.
Right. I started with the minions because my theory is start with the minions.
Well, you want the heroes to look best, right? So yeah. Up to it.
Start with the minions, screw up a ton, learn some lessons, and then take on the heroes that I want to paint from there. Maybe it's a misguided plan, but I mean, I'm learning a lot. I feel like I'm learning the difference between the type of paints, how they operate. I'm getting advice from my friend Paul about zenithing, which is about controlling the kind of the direction of the highlights.
That's like layering the under, like the base coat layering. Yeah. So then the speed paints just naturally.
Yeah. So there's two ways to do it. You can either do a solid black primer on everything, and then you can either spray a white primer on top of it from the top down, or a different direction if the light source is coming from a different direction. The idea is that the highlights are above where the sun would be, theoretically.
Or you can even do a gray in between those at sort of the lower diagonal levels.
Sure, sure. Or the other one is to take a dry brush and to take like a white or a very fine layer and then kind of just skimming the top layers that are higher up and then thus leaving the deeper depressions darker with the shadows. And anyways, there's a whole world to it. I'm making a lot of mistakes, but I'm happy. I'm happy making those mistakes. And I don't have a deadline for this, right? I don't have to turn these in a specific time. I'm learning. What more can I ask for?
Yeah, my friend and former guest of the show, Jamie Daggers, had recommended this particular brand, Stylin Reds. It comes in the three colors, gray, black, and white, that I've been experimenting with some zenithal. The textures of the sort of the consistency of like the white is really hard to work with, but it's a good. I'm finding the black and grays at least pretty easy to paint and get some of those highlights. So, but still trying to perfect the zenithal myself.
Yeah, I realize I'm not good with these speed paints. I'm just like, I'm missing the point. Maybe it's because like I actually do have a little bit of painting experience because I went to art school for a little bit. Don't worry, I quit. So I'm not a real art student. But I learned just enough that I have some underlying theory and it's like lingering in my brain back there.
Just enough to know what you don't know.
Exactly. Just enough to screw me up. So I got to unlearn some of those lessons, I guess. So that's been occupying a lot of my time. And on the RPG side, you mentioned it's summer. Game groups are sort of breaking up. And the week previous, our GM session run by, our D&D session run by GM Paul, he wound it down. It was the season finale, and we ended that campaign. So we basically have nothing in the books. Last week, I just went to his house, Paul and Kelly's house, and did some minis painting. That was a blast. Love that. But we want to keep gaming. So I think I'm going to do a one-shot or a mini campaign of City of Mist, which I talked about a little bit recently. Basically a PBTA, but unlike a lot of the more popular PBTAs like Apocalypse World.
You mentioned that earlier. I don't know what that means.
A PBTA means Powered by the Apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
Which is a kind of a subgenre of role-playing games, of indie role-playing games, inspired by a game called Apocalypse World, Powered by the Apocalypse, and other popular games like Dungeon World, Glitter Hearts, Thirsty Sword Lesbians, Masks, even things like Blades in the Dark, Scum and Villainy, City of Mist. All of these are descendants of PBTA, Powered by the Apocalypse World, but they might come in different flavors. Basically, PBTA is more about what do the players want to do, and the players narrate for themselves what they're doing, and then the GM or the Master of Ceremonies kind of interprets it and makes rulings. And they leverage these things called moves. And depending on the system, they'll have, you know, 8 to 10 kind of core moves. And the moves represent like really broad things. Like there's something called going toe-to-toe in City of Mist. And it's like anytime you basically have combat, or you have even like arm wrestling or sort of tug of war sort of thing at the edge of a bridge, you're trying to fight for the golden idol or something, like that's going toe-to-toe. It's all going toe-to-toe. But that is just a method for resolving a narrative thing that the player describes, right? So it's like a resolution system as opposed to a codified set of actions. And that's what's really powerful about it. It's not limiting. It's the opposite. It's freeing because it's less defined.
To be honest.
it's a different approach. It's a different approach. But I don't know. Like the alternative is you could be the opposite, right? Where everything's defined and you need three giant books like D&D, fifth edition, and then you need all these supplements on top of it. So that's the opposite direction, right? You can have everything codified, or you could have not very much codified. City of Mist is cool because it doesn't have things like standard things like attributes. Everything's based off of tags. So anything that can be an asset to you is called a tag. So characters are made up of these kind of like four cards, so to speak. And some of them are more mundane things that represent normal aspects of a average mundane person. Like, you know, you might be a nurse or a firefighter or an accountant. And then others are more fantastical things. Like you might be a spell weaver, or you might talk to the dead, or you might be able to teleport from place to place. And every character has a spectrum. They could be two mundane and two magical, or they could be one mundane and three magical, and so that you're more of a magical person, or you could be more mundane and then you have a hint of the magical, so you're entering into that magical world, kind of like a Percy Jackson or something like that. So it has a lot of flexibility, and I like that tag-based system because it's very simple to resolve, and it also gives the players a lot of flexibility to sort of tell their own story. So as long as they're creative, they can look at the the tags that are represent them, and they can come up with a new way to use it, a new way to integrate it, a new way to spin it to achieve their goals. Mm. And the game master just has to kind of adjudicate it.
Yeah, you mentioned that tag system lasts on the last playlist, and that's one of the big selling points for me. I struggle to create a new character out of the ether and just grab a character concept fully formed, right? But that seed germ of some prompts to get start a character and then take it from there. That's like how I like
It's kind of board game like, right? Because you could I could literally print those cards off, and the players could draft them around a table like a draft of Magic or Seven Wonders or something like that. So I could see that being very powerful and exciting. But you can make it really easy too, and hand people pre-gens. Mm-hmm. They do have these things called playbooks. Playbooks is very common. It's kind of like a character class, but only one player can play one playbook, and it's kind of like a theme, a package, and you choose some of the options on that package, so you can become like this kind of mage or this type of paladin or this type of detective. You make it your own, but it's still mostly put together. So
yeah, but let's exciting do stuff one shot sometime.
Absolutely, I'd love to do that. I'm going to try and teach my oldest kid, and so I'm preparing this material. Be happy to run a session with you and others, and I'm going to try and run it this week with my regular group. So wish me luck.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to keep this short, just because we're running a little long here. But in the summer slump of not having many board games to play and struggling with the motivation to play solo board games, especially when there's so many good video games lately, I'll be honest. I've been trying to figure out how I can sort of start putting my toe in the water of TTRPGs, shall we say, and dealing with my own anxieties around those, especially struggling with the improvisation that they require, and trying to figure out how much of that is performance anxiety with others, even with close friends. And so I've been looking at some of the options around sort of solo games, like five Parsecs from Home, for example, but also solo journaling games is a big new sort of sub-genre. And I mentioned recently that I picked up some Zines as part of a Kickstarter campaign. So I've been looking at one of those. Let me find it here. It's called The Portal at Hill House from Travis Hill and his partner Lindy. So it's only like a 20-page Zine. So pretty simple, not a huge rules overhead. I think it's like $5 on itch.io if you can get a PDF of that. And it's around the concept of like there's a portal that's threatening the fabric of reality, you know that old chestnut, and you're going to the house, and that can mean any number of things. You design the house by whatever that means. You design the layout and have an idea at least of the outside of it, and then you use a standard deck of cards to you're searching for three items. You reveal cards to trigger some prompts as to whether you find those items. And like the prompts will give you basically a tone of what that room might look like. And the idea is you write a few sentences about what you experience in there. And so it's playing with some fields of sort of cosmic horror that like I read House of Leaves a couple of years ago, and that book has haunted me ever since. So my interest is very much flavored by that. Things like The Oldest House from Control, the video game, is also very much in mind. Obviously, Liminal Spaces is big right now. So I'm bringing all of those sort of interests into it and exploring some of those concepts. Obviously, you can make it whatever you want to. And it's hard to say. I can't really judge. I haven't played it yet. I've just been reading through it, setting myself up and thinking through some concepts. But I love the idea of that. I'm thinking of playing a game of Floor Plan, the Roll and Write board game. Maybe play a game of that to get like to get the floor plan of the house that I'm then going to transfer into House and Hill. Oh, sorry, the Hill House. That's it. So thinking through how I'm going to do that. I'm not sure how creative I'm going to be with it, but just as a practice, it's a low overhead to try your hand at one of these rather than buying, you know, I think Thousand Year Vampire is the other big one. That's like $60 and a lot more overhead in learning the game and processing that. So if you want to try your hand at one of these games, I think this seems like a really interesting option.
Yeah, everything you're saying is making me very excited to talk about. have another RPG episode. Hopefully we can have a indie RPG episode. Maybe this is hot RPG summer. If you're finding that we can't get a board game night together, you and I can do some RPG stuff. We can do some GM-less RPGs. We can do some skirmish games. You could try out your GMing with me. I could try out my GMing with you. There's so many options of things that we can do. I'm totally open to it, and I want to try out tons of stuff to see if it's if it's something I'm interested in or to learn more about. So I'm wide open.
No, I mean, wanting to return to that. I mean, I've not played one since the Fallout episode we did last year. It's so much more. I said it's a lot more to coordinate and organize, both in reading the book and getting grouped together. Much bigger investment, but I'd like to try and get that going again.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a big investment. There are board game manuals that are longer than a lot of the zine games that you're describing there.
Yeah, so. Well, that's what I'm trying to ease my way in. And yeah, if you have any other recommendations for sort of lighter loads for some TTRPGs.
100%. I got a couple in mind. Let's do it. All right.
That's the listeners too, I mean, sorry.
Oh yeah, I guess they could tell us some things too.
Okay.
All right.
Shall we take it out? The next game we'll be talking about, not next week, but maybe in a couple of weeks, will be A Feast for Odin. Going back into the archives for a classic board game from Uwe Rosenberg.
That's right. I got to play some more of that. I've been enjoying these playlist episodes, so if that has to be the next episode, it'll be fun. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about.
I had several other games I was going to bring up tonight and just did not have time, so yeah, lots to talk about. And I will say I have an exciting guest lined up for the next episode for Feast for Odin, so stay tuned for that.
Awesome. All right, well, let's give people a chance to play some games themselves.
Yeah, well, if you have any questions or comments or have some recommendations for games to play, you can contact us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or our website omnigamers.club. You can find us on Twitter and Blue Sky. I just recently set up a sort of dedicated account on Blue Sky, so you can find us there now.
And like and subscribe to us on YouTube as well. You can check out our video episodes that are going out weekly on YouTube if you haven't checked us out there yet. Anyhow, until next time, folks, please have a very balanced diet of gaming.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.